Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
This episode of Your Welcome is brought to you for free today by our friends at BetOnline.ag. It might be all about football right now, but the NHL has just arrived. This is a great time to get in on all the sports betting action, so don't miss out. Get in the mix at betonline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts, an exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
Uncle Cheo, Uncle Cheo, there's no bad guy like Uncle Cheo. Never lost, not even a round. Undefeated, undisputed, oh yeah. Here comes the bad guy.
What's happening, guys? Happy Wednesday! And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. Okay, I am back. I've been on the road about 2 weeks, and I'm not a two-week guy. By the way, if I am ever telling you guys a story and it involves some elaborate travel, and you ever misinterpret that to, oh, what an arrogant jerk bragging about flying and jet-setting around the world, then you are missing my point. I love my job. I got to tell you, I am such a fight fan, and my time in this sport will end the way my time in this sport began, which is as a fan. To be able to participate is a tremendous opportunity. I understand all of those things, and I do take them very seriously. Tremendous opportunity. To have to travel to do them, I'm telling you, it's a very hard thing to do. Being on the road, particularly as a married with kids, that's a tough thing. And thank goodness for FaceTime, right? But when you're in different time zones, and then you have a job which is largely based around high energy, could you guys imagine watching or listening to somebody who just sounds like this? Oh, this is going to be another great fight. You sure don't want to miss this action. I mean, right? You see what I mean? You got to have energy. And some people have a natural energy. I think maybe I qualify as that. But there are times when you have a human element, which is known as jet lag, which is known as it's 2 a.m, according to my body. Back home in Westland, Oregon, it is 2 a.m. But guess what? I'm live. I am on TV in Melbourne. It's one of these things. So just to share with you, I want to be able to tell you guys stories. Go, well, I was over here this weekend and I was over there. But I want you to go, what? Chael's all Kardashianed out now? He's trying to, you know, brag about this trap. No, it's not meant to be that at all. That's the burden of it. But when I do go to these places and something happens, I feel to come back and tell you guys about it. Okay, I digress, but I do need to say, even with the disclosure that I just made for you about hating to travel, Melbourne, Australia is something special. It truly is. I have the people as number 2 on my all-time list for the nicest people as a whole that I've ever met. I still have the Canadians at number 1, and many people in Australia have heard me say that and listened to the show and told me they do not like that. They want to be number 1. I think number 2 is pretty good on an all-around nicest people, right? I don't know if people would say that about my city, and I know particularly about the country as a whole. If somebody's only experience in America was out on the East Coast where they're honking horns at each other and using swear words as a friendly greeting, but you didn't know that was just a friendly greeting, that's how you think you're about to be in a fist fight. That's what it's like in West. Somebody honks a horn at you, that's a problem. Yeah, other parts of the country, that's just how you drive. Okay, fine. But Melbourne's one of these people. I just give you an example. I was on the street in Melbourne, okay? And I was out making a podcast. and it was for YouTube, and it's like a coffee challenge. My partner Ryan used to live in Australia. His wife is Australian. His mother-in-law is still there. So when he went along on this, for him, there was like this excitement and glow. There was something nostalgic about it. It was a time to reminisce. But because he's with me, he also has a very small, even though we're friends, he's still got a piece of him where you are visiting my city. And I need to make sure you have a good experience within my city. So here are the things we're going to drink, and here are the things that you must eat to get the Australian experience. All right, great. But top of that list was coffee. Now, I will tell you guys, I drink coffee for really two reasons. Now it's a habit. It is literally how I start my day, just walk, stumbling through the house all tired, over the coffee machine, pour coffee. But two, the added benefit of the coffee, which is the caffeine. If you're tired in the morning, you have a cup of coffee. I'm sure you guys can relate, but that's the only reason I drink. I don't care how that coffee comes. Hot, cold, I'd prefer if you have cream in it. If you don't, whatever. This is a necessity, and I'm drinking a cup at 6 a.m. So when my partner Ryan is telling me, no, this is the best coffee in the world. They're known for their coffee. This is, you know, forget about the national brands in America. These are ma and pa shops, and they do it better. Man, I'll play along because you seem excited, and we're here together. But that's as far as this goes. I don't give a damn about a cup of coffee. However, to set the stage for you guys, we were trying to find a specific coffee house, which we had asked you, the listener, to recommend for us. You guys gave us 17 suggestions, and we went through that list and did our absolute level best to try them all, and then we were going to rate them. This was our level of fun. This is our level way of passing the time, and then reporting back to you guys so that we were engaging with one another. Okay, well, there's a coffee house, and it was like called Mr. Coffee. So we can't find it. And we're walking around and it was hot. Melbourne's a really interesting city where the locals will tell you we have four seasons in a day. And they're telling the truth. It'll be windy, rainy, hot, like suntan, swimming pool hot, and cold. And I'm talking like shivery, put on a jacket cold, all in the same day. So when you're out in the streets and we're trying to find this place and we've got our phones with us, which means we have navigation. But if you guys have ever used navigation in a big city, it screws you up left and right. Take 10 more steps. It's on your left. You do 10 more steps on the left and all of a sudden it's showing you to take a U-turn. And this, well, no, you're supposed to be in an alley. Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry. You're two blocks to the west. Oh, which way's the west? Some people, northeast, south, do I go right, left, forward, or back? Talk to me in those. Okay. So we're lost. We're lost. We're walking around so much. It's so hot out. I can feel the socks in my shoes sweating. So we ask a guy. We finally ask it. And they all speak English, right? I mean, that's the good news. We weren't in like Russia or something where communication was hard. So we just grab a guy, just a total random guy, and go, hey, do you know where Mr. Coffee is? Because I don't know where Mr. Coffee is. However, if you're looking for coffee, I know a place. And you got to try it. And he goes, all right, here's what you want to do. And he turns around and there's people everywhere and there's a hustle and a bustle. And he goes, you know what? Forget it. Let me just show you. Come on. Okay. So now we have an escort. We have a free tour guide who's going to lead us to his personal favorite coffee place. That's pretty cool. Well, we get there and it's about 2.5 blocks away, which with the traffic and the lights and the hustle, it takes about 8 minutes. So by the time we're there, we've now made a friend. Right, we're visiting the whole time. He's saying, hey, where are you guys from? What do you do? This whole bit. So he gets us there. So I said, would you like to join us? Can we buy you a coffee? And he goes, oh, no, I got to get to work. Do you understand the point there? This guy was so nice. He went out of his way to take two strangers to a coffee. Oh, and by the way, it was the opposite direction that he had to get for work. So he had to hustle off. I just thought I would tell the story because I thought the people of Melbourne, who in many ways represent that guy. I met 10 more guys just like that guy. I felt that they were so nice and so hospitable that the absolute least I could do was to give them this type of public praise. Really great. The competition this year in the Podcast One Sportsnet Challenge has been intense with all of us neck and neck trying to get the lead. I got to tell you, I'm still in the middle of the pack, but for the bums from the Bid Podcast and the Adam Carolla Show ahead of me, man, that's not acceptable. I am planning on making a strong comeback, though, with some games in the NFL this weekend. I like the Eagles over the Vikings. I like the Seahawks taking on the Browns, the Texans over the Chiefs, and the 49ers versus the Rams in a divisional clash. visit our good friends and our exclusive partner at Podcast One. Go over to betonline.ag. Take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag. Use the promo code PODCAST1. That's betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and the exclusive partners of Podcast One Sportsnet.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Listen up, football fans. Don't miss the latest episode of the Woody Page Podcast as Woody is joined by NFL Hall of Famer and pop culture icon Joe Namath.
When you get to heaven, what would you like God to say to you?
Oh, man. Nice going. You know, I think people would respect. Really, I've learned throughout the years, respect is very important.
Subscribe and download new episodes of the Woody Page Podcast every Thursday on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com. And make sure you leave a rating and review.
Now, back to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
We do get to business now, and I'm talking about the fight. And as this fight was coming up, the whole city was very torn. They were very torn on Adesanya and Whittaker. And the Australians felt as though they must say, I think Whittaker's going to win, and I predict that he would win. So then I had to kind of do the dance and go, okay, now hold on a second. Do you think Whittaker's going to win, or do you feel compelled to back him because you're Australian, he's Australian? And a lot of them said, they kind of look left and look right, make sure nobody can hear him, and go, the second one, yeah, I feel compelled to back our guy. Well, for me, that's a cool thing, because we don't have that in America. I don't know a damn thing about it. I never experienced it as an athlete, but I don't do it as a fan either. In North America, we do not back our guy. It is not the American versus the Brazilian or the American versus the Russian or, yeah, the World Cup's going on. So, you know, we look down our nose at the British all week. It's nothing like, we don't have anything like that. We will cheer for whoever we want to cheer. They could come, you could be in their hometown and you would boo them if somehow you thought these other guys were cooler. That's just the way it is. So to be around some of these nations that have this type of pride is an interesting thing. And I always find it to be a very cool thing, but it's also not something that I've ever got to experience firsthand. I walked into arenas in America against somebody from somewhere else. I'm the one getting booed. I never thought it was weird. Didn't hurt my feelings in the least. That's the way it goes. If I was a fan, I'd do the same thing back, right? We just don't have that in America. So the fight is upon us. All right. 57,126 people walk into Marvel Arena to witness this match. And there is a lot of things on that. Let's start at the beginning. Robert Whittaker has been out. Like it or not, want to talk about ring rust, want to act like ring rust isn't a real thing. Either way, I think we can at least agree we don't get better at doing something by not doing it. And by the way, when he was out because he was injured. Now, he shattered his hand in the Yoel Romero fight. That takes a meaningful amount of time before you can get back to throwing punches. And when you're in the business of throwing punches, it's relevant. He was out for a meaningful period of time. And meaningful period of time is the best that I can do for you. I don't know how long that stomach and the intestinal issues that he had that thwarted the Gastelum fight the night before. That, by the way, Whittaker tried to fight through. They take him to a hospital via ambulance and told him he almost died. He says, somebody get me my trunks and get me to the arena. I mean, right? Tough guy. But he'd been out. Does that matter? Does being out and walking back into 57,000 people matter? And you can ask anybody you want ahead of time. They may give you a real truthful answer. They may give you the tough guy answer. They're likely to give you the answer that they wish was the real answer. But they can't answer the question direct because you don't know. Because they've never done it. Because it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to walk out in front of 57,126 people supporting you and backing you, or against you and cheering opposite, is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Oh, and we should include, by once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, most people in a lifetime will never have that opportunity, but the one or two guys that do have it, it will never happen again. So to ask somebody ahead of time to project how they're going to deal or how they're going to feel emotionally going into an environment that has never been created before, it was a record-setting gate. It's tough. So what do? As fans, we listen to them and then we go, well, you know, but not so fast. Or, yeah, I'm not really sure about that. I mean, this is what we do. We get a conversation going. I spoke to Whittaker before the fight. And I brought you guys this on YouTube, but I haven't brought you it to Your Welcome yet. So for those of you that haven't heard, but this was a very interesting part of Fight Week for me. And I asked Whitaker that question. You know, what's that going to be like? And he goes, oh, man, it's an opportunity. I'm pumped. I can't wait. You know, he had a big smile on his face. He looked very genuine and sincere. I said, you know, Robert, it is interesting because so much has been made of this fight and your return and Adesanya, but so much has been made about the dynamic that goes into fighting in such a huge, massive arena in front of this kind of a crowd. And I said, but let me ask you something from the exact opposite end of the spectrum, which is your experience of The Ultimate Fighter. And that's where I became familiar with Robert Whittaker. But that is where you guys became familiar with him. It's the same question, but reversed, which is fighting in front of more people ever or fighting in front of your smallest crowd ever, because that's what the set of The Ultimate Fighter is. There is 20 people there. Of those 20 people, they are staff only. It's the guy with the camera. It's the guy with the microphone. It's the guy that tells you when it's your time to walk. It's a couple of producers that are watching. You have a teammate. You have a couple of opposite teammates. There is no walkout music. There is no Bruce Buffer. There is no Joe Rogan. There is no John Anik. It is dead silence. The referee says, are you ready? Are you ready? And you hear every word he says. Normally in a fight, you guys can hear that at home. The fighters can't hear it. Ref looks at you. He says something. When his mouth goes shut, you just know to say yes. Robert Whittaker had a fight in The Ultimate Fighter in front of nobody. It's the exact same scenario of awkwardness, of opportunity, of I must win, but reversed. And he did very well. So I said to him, what is going to be weirder, the 57,000 or the 20? He goes, ah. And he didn't need a second to think. He goes, the 20. He goes, that was so, I could remember hearing my opponents breathe. I could remember getting hit in the body. And I go, ah. And I knew my opponent could hear it. I didn't want him to hear it. I could remember the leg kick. I could hear it. It was terrible. And then even the announcements for the celebration, there was no, yeah, and cheer, and the music starts playing, and Buffer over your shoulder. He goes, it was so weird. And he goes, I know if I could get through that, I could get through this. That was hard. This is an opportunity. And when he told me that, I believed him. Okay, that makes sense to me, and I believe you. Now, I don't need to ask that question of Adesanya, because I know how it's going to affect Adesanya, right? I've been in this sport for 22 years. I know exactly how it's going to affect him. Not good. Those people are not there just to see him. They're largely there not to see him. This is 57. This is championship rounds. This is the baddest dude in the world. And I'm talking about Whittaker, that he's got to walk out there and face. Oh, and I should add, he's the B-side. Oh, and I should add, everywhere he goes, he's getting called out. Oh, and I should add, a guy that wants to chop his head off with an undefeated record named Paulo Acosta is sitting in the very front row. Oh, and you might want to take into account that Dana White has been telling anybody that will listen that his reward for getting past Whittaker is getting locked in there with John Jones. I mean, I don't need to ask him how I know how he's feeling, right? Let's get this over with. Well, turns out those 22 years of experience that I thought I knew about the sport, I met somebody new, because when it's Adesanya's time to walk, he puts on a show. He puts on a dance routine that was choreographed with three of his lifelong childhood buddies who he wanted to extend part of this experience to them as well. I thought it was a very enlightening, even a privilege. I think he gave us the privilege of showing us who he is, not only as a person, but as an athlete. I took more from that damn walkout than I took from anything. He didn't surprise me in the cage. I've seen him whip ass before. I've seen him knock guys down before. I've seen him push. I've seen him be dynamic. I've seen him be elusive. I've seen him be weird. To see him be that calm, to see him to be a guy that could enjoy the moment, I must share for you, I really have one regret in my career, my entire career. I didn't enjoy any of it. It went by like that. Clayton Hires used to tell me every day, champ, try to enjoy this. I'm cutting weight. I've got to go run. Then I got to go spar. I got to go to bed sore and tired. I got to get up. Eventually, I got to get on a plane, get locked in a cage with a trained killer. I mean, and Clay, what part of this am I going to enjoy? And he said, oh, all of it. Got to enjoy all of it. He goes, it goes by like that. Well, he was right. It did. It went by like that. And I never got to smell the roses. So I'm watching Adesanya. I'm watching him enjoy the moment. I'm watching him do everything I wished I would have done. The ones that you look up to, the ones that go on to be the stars and the icons, the ones that when you're a little kid, you go get a poster of and put them on your wall. They're just simply guys who are doing something that is almost fantasy to you. Something that you would inspire to be like. And for me to watch somebody walk out and enjoy the moment and have fun on top of having incredible skills, on top of an outcome that favored you. And then to also see somebody that understands, okay, the sport is now done. The competitiveness is now done, but the business begins. And he grabs a microphone and he sets up what's next. In fighting, if you are going to be in this business, there is nothing more important than having another fight. That's it. That's the game. People walk around and say, I want to be undefeated. Yeah, that'd be really great. If you were to question them deeply, why do you want to be undefeated? They would say, okay, you don't want to know why I want to be undefeated? Because there's kind of a history in this. If you lose three fights in a row, you get cut. And this is what I do for a living. I really don't want to get cut. It would mean I'm out of a job. Okay, great. So what it really comes down to is in this job, just to make sure that tomorrow when you wake up, you have a job. Yes. Yes. That is the answer. That trumps everything. So for Izzy, I get it. He's the champion. I get it. He's the new face of the cup. I get all of these things. He doesn't. He does not understand what it was that he pulled off. He was out there to do something different. And it started with a walkout where he wanted to include guys that he came up with. That was important to him. Don't forget where you came from. Pass it back. Pay it forward. Loved it. I thought it showed us a lot of who he is as a person in a very positive way. Okay, the skills. Not stunning. In fairness, anybody that can get the jump on Robert Whittaker deserves a ton of credit. But as far as seeing Izzy go out there and just perform a dynamic matrix that his opponent just can't solve, I have seen him do that before. To watch him then go right in to the business side, which is to set up what's next. How many times, guys, have we seen a champion? Have we seen a guy become champion? And the moment he does, he turns the gun right back on everybody, on all of us who have cheered for him, on all of us who have covered him in the media, all of us who have sat down and pushed the button and purchased and helped contribute, on the promoters, the companies, the boys in the back, everybody else that is aspired and fighting and has the same dream. How many times have we seen them point the gun back, go, I'm the champion now. Well, who do you want to fight? Well, you know, sit down and talk. I'm the champion now. Everybody's coming for me. All different ways to guise their real message, which is transparent and boring and underhanded, which is, let's see what Dana wants to pay me now. That is the most underhanded way you could go about it. Absolutely is. You beg for an opportunity, you get it, you succeed at your opportunity, business stop. Everybody now has to stop while you point the gun. Well, when I ask you how many times have we seen it, guys, how many times have we not seen it? That'd be a lot easier question to answer because it is one. Saturday, Israel Adesanya. No, where's Dana? No, let's have a contract. Let's sit down and talk about talking. There's a guy in the front row, Paulo Acosta. The ratings say he's number one. Many of you fans say he's number one. Somebody flew his ass out here and put him in the front row, hoping that this moment would happen. So, ding, ding. The moment is happening. You, me, venue. Book. Okay. I'm in. What more could he do? I'm in. Let me share a story that you guys weren't able to see. So the way this works for me, when I'm doing the coverage with ESPN, we are in the arena. Our set is set up right on the floor of the arena. We just have a little bit of a raised platform, just raised up a little bit so the cameras can get a nice clean shot of everything. So Adesanya comes up on this, but we're recording. We're going, right? TV show's on. We're live. Adesanya pops up on the set. And he's wearing his shorts and nothing else. He's naked aside from this. Now, everybody has a different interpretation. There's no necklace on. There's no earrings in. There's no tape on his hands. There's no gloves on his hands. There's no socks or shoes on his feet. He's got nothing on but his fight shorts. And he doesn't fight in the loose board shorts, right? He fights in like what a dude would go jump in the ocean when he's in Hawaii, right? He's in like, and then he's got a belt on each arm. So when he comes on set, he catches my eye. So he looks at me and he gives me a nod. Well, I'm on live TV, right? I have a my eyes have to stay over here, but at the same time, the champ gave you a nod. He's coming out of his way to come up and be a show that you're part of. I got to give him a nod back. The least I can do is acknowledge his existence, so I give him a nod back. Well, he uses that opportunity to quickly turn around so no, his back is to me, belts over both shoulders, and begin some kind of like a butt dance. I think the kids will like call it twerking. You're right, going up and down. My body doesn't move this way, and it's funnier than all hell. Oh, and by the way, I'm on TV, so I'm trying to watch him. Because I have to. I can't. How do you look? I'm trying to look at the camera. So I want Anik, who I'm working with. It's like, Anik, you see this too. Now the audience sees me laughing. Tell the audience why I'm laughing. I wished I would have had my cell phone, and I didn't. If I would have had my phone, I would have put a camera. I would have recorded. You guys would have thought it was the funniest thing. So finally he comes over. He gets introduced to the audience. He had one of the best lines of the entire week. And he had some good lines that week, and so did plenty of other guys, right? Plenty of other guys were doing some great lifting this week. Whitaker had some great ones. Dan Hooker was looking to steal the show and came close to doing it. But the reason I want to tell you about this line is it went over everybody's head. This should be a headline. This should be turned into a t-shirt. This was one of the great things that was spoken on Fight Week. And he said, you want to know why I have two belts? I didn't know the, because you want to? I didn't know what to say. Why you have two belts? Yeah, sure. You have. I was frozen because the question was so simple. He said, because I'm the double intern champion. And nobody at the desk, Dominic and Anik, they kind of let it go. Even I kind of let it go, but I'm going, wait a minute, in my mind, I'm going, wait a minute, there's something brilliant there. Everybody's talking about this champ thing. Everybody's coming out to say, yeah, the interim championship isn't real, and the unified championship is all that matters, and fans are even coming out and going, I wish we'd just do away with this interim championship. He said, no, I'm not the champion. I'm the double intern champion. Tonight wasn't about Whitaker's belt. Whitaker never mattered to me. I came out to defend my belt, and I succeeded. I showed up with the interim title. I now have two interim titles. Why is nobody, I'm looking at Anik, I'm looking at Domico, why is nobody, this is genius. This is marketing 101. This is one of the great things that I've ever said. This is the greatest thing ever said for the interim belt. He's going to go on and defend the interim belt. He'll go up to John Jones and put the interim belts on the title. I mean, come on. This was gold. I'm standing next to a genius. I'm standing next to a guy that understands at different times, you have to wear different hats. There is a time to warm up. There is a time to entertain. There is a time to get in there and take care of business. And there is a time to look to new business and forming something new. The most important thing you can possibly do in fighting for a job, as a job, is to continue to make sure you have a job. When the champion calls somebody out, it's a very special thing. When a champion calls somebody out, though, usually it is to make sure that he's safe and protected. It is a selfish thing. It is looking around, sizing up the division and going, all right, I'm going to call this guy out. I think that I can sell it. I think the promotion will do it. And this guy can't go with me. He's a little too small, or he's orthodox. It's got problem with Southpaw. I can beat this guy. When the champion of the world calls out an undefeated number one ranked guy who nobody else has been able to win a match against, it's another sign of honor. It's another sign of respect to the sport, to the business, to passing forward. Hey, somebody gave me an opportunity. His name was Robert Whitaker. Before him, his name was Kelvin Gastelum. I'm not here to take opportunities. I am here to give whatever opportunity I can, whether I like you or I don't. For one night, we will be a partner. And tonight, I will make your dream come true and give you the opportunity. So go and tell your friends and family and hold it high above you and then get in the gym and train, because I'm going to embarrass you on that night. Whatever it is, there is still an honor in it, and it's something unique. Guys, I don't mean to sit here and spend endless amount of time on Adesanya. However, he is refreshing beyond belief. I mean, I've got to tell you, this guy is refreshing. Oh, and by the way, when he calls out Paulo, you know what he called him out for? The first of 2020. First of 2020. Before any of you think that's a long time away, go look at a calendar. That's right around the corner. And the other piece of relevance is to it, there's only two pay-per-views left this year. One's at MSG. It's already booked up, called a BMF title. You might have heard of it. And the other is December 14th. In Las Vegas, oh, by the way, it's loaded to the gills. So the likelihood in getting on one of those, so he puts himself into 2020, that was another way of saying, I want to fight as soon as possible. As absolutely soon as possible, let's do this and figure this out. All things that a champion never says. All things that a true champion should say. All things that somebody who is going to become the face of an organization and the biggest star of all time, which is largely already represented not just by those two interim titles over each shoulder, but also by a record-breaking gate. What better measure do we possibly have in this sport as it sits than numbers? We can sit and debate who a bigger star is. I haven't the foggiest idea where that comes from. I can remember the days when Ronda Rousey was said to be the biggest star in the sport, and that was a lot of fun and a very sweet compliment that was put on her, but the numbers simply did not support it. She was the most likely to end up on Jimmy Fallon's sofa. She was the most likely and only to end up on Ellen's couch. Those were big opportunities. And therefore, the statement of biggest star was bestowed upon her. But if you looked around the arena, it wasn't full. And if you went and looked at the live gate receipts, there was no records broken there. But we were continued to be told this was the biggest star. Okay, fine. Fine. So this is to take away from Ronda or anybody else. I'm just saying, if we're going to go ahead and have this conversation to make believe that it is not as Adesanya when he currently sits at 57,126, I don't know if it would be true. It would seem almost irresponsible. And of course, you'll have the conversation that, hey, Robert Whittaker had to do with that, and it was a geographical location. I agree. I fully agree with you. I was the first to say it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. But to act like a double champion, two-time interim champion, double-double interim champion, that just did a record-setting gate, brought the crowd to its feet on his walkabout, brought the crowd to its feet during the performance, and brought the crowd to his feet with a post-fight speech. The only three opportunities that you were given. Three opportunities to have your spotlight and have your moment. And he knocked all three out of the park to make believe that he is now not the face and the biggest draw and the biggest star in the UFC. That's a tough one. It really is, and I know a lot of you are going to push back, and you're not wrong to do so. A lot of you are going to go, Chael, come on, you're forgetting Conor McGregor? No, I'm not forgetting Conor at all. By the way, who's Conor's next opponent? And then there you are, left there standing like a fool. I mean, if a guy's a big star, you would think he had an opponent, right? It's really the only thing a guy has in this sport is somebody to compete to get. He doesn't have one. Well, John Jones has to be up there. John Jones is up there. I'm not talking about who's up there. I'm talking about who's biggest. By the way, who's John Jones's next opponent? He hadn't fought in a very long time. He's not on suspension. He could use the paycheck. Who's his next opponent? Well, you know, they don't have one yet. Oh, okay. It would just seem to me a big star who's been out for a meaningful period of time. The end of the year is approaching. The cards are getting laid out. It would just seem to me that he would not be in the running. So as you start to break it down that, well, Khabib's a huge star. Khabib is a massive star. I agree. If I was to turn back on you and go, who's his next opponent? Maybe not the best example. Of all that I just went through, maybe not the best, because I think we all do know it's Tony Ferguson. I think we know that, but I'm not positive. I do know with Adesanya exactly what he's got coming up. And that's very rare. These press conferences don't go this way. A guy gets done fighting, and it's all about, oh man, I just want to get back with my team. I just want to recover and take a shower, you know, take a couple weeks off. Eat some bad food. That's really all I want to think about right now. That's a true answer. Nobody is lying to you or being disingenuous with you when they tell you that. They are also boring you. They were telling you something that is about as exciting as watching grass grow or watching paint dry. Adesanya shows up with an answer. After a fight, you will have 48 hours to continue to promote yourself. You will then be forgotten. You will be forgotten for 3 months until you sign for a new fight. Then the press tour begins and the excitement and the social media and everybody thinks you're a cool guy and you get your name back out there. But then the world of promoting, staying on the tip of people's tongues is super important to do. You just only have 48 hours to do it after you get done fighting. The media tour will continue. Hey, tell me how you feel. Great performance. Hey, man, tell me how you're feeling right now. You got your heart torn out. But you only have 48 hours to do it. After that, it's on to somebody else. It's on to who's fighting next, who's hot, who just had a big announcement made. You have to understand the recipe. This whole thing is about manipulation. You must first understand the game so you can then manipulate the game. Adesanya did not miss a point. And I've seen very intelligent people come through this sport before. Not very many, and it's few and far between. But I would tell you, Conor McGregor also understood these concepts. He understood the power of a press conference. He might have understood it on a different level than most people because he did a worldwide tour with Floyd Mayweather, did 4 press conferences, sold them out on an opportune time, such as noon on a Monday in LA. Gag me with a smurf, I'd rather be anywhere other than sitting indoors and watching two fighters talk about fighting. Well, no, wrong. Sold out. They were scalping tickets on the street. So Conor understood it on a different level. He understood that when the fight goes, I better have an opponent because if I don't, I've only got 48 hours and they will move on to somebody else. Okay, so all of these great things that we learn about Adesanya, plus we get to keep talking about him because we know what's next, which is Paula. Let's look at the other side of the coin, which is Whittaker. Now, Whittaker did not fight poorly. This is very important to understand. There is no part about Whittaker where he's got to sit back and then throw the baby out with the bathwater. Okay, this is not, oh, I need new training, and I need new coaches, and I need a new gym, and I need a new team, and I need a new scout. It's none of those things. He fought very well. Whittaker came in just physically looking him up even the day before at the weigh-in. He was hard as a rock. He cut his weight right. He was disciplined. I mean, you can read a book by its cover, at least in that regard. That's why we do the weigh-in and face these guys off. A lot of it is just looking at them and comparing it to the way they looked before. Man, this guy looked fantastic. He came out there, he was not scared. He was ready to compete. He never at one point in that fight got tired. He never at one point in that fight tried to stop winning. He never at one point in that fight did not follow his game plan. Here was one of the questions going into the fight. Should all hell break loose for Whitaker? Does he have a plan B, meaning the takedown? Does he have an ability to get Adesanya from his feet to the ground and see what it looks like from there? Now, the same question was never asked of Adesanya because we know the answer. No, he does not. He does not. And he's not working on one. And that's not part of the recipe for Adesanya. With his coaches, it's all about stand up and then get back up. They are confident that nobody in MMA can deal with him with the punches and the kicks. They knew as shortly as 2 years ago that some guys could take him out of that realm, though. And now anything can happen. So his entire mindset is stay up, get back up. But for Whitaker, Whitaker is more complete. I do believe if you just want to go through all the skills and everything in the repertoire, even regardless of the evidence that we saw Saturday, I do believe that Whitaker is the better fighter. I won't concede he's a better stand-up fighter. I won't even concede that he's a more dynamic athlete. I will tell you, when it comes to knowing about the sport, if you could have Adesanya's skills or you could have Whitaker's, it'd be real smart to choose Whitaker's. And I thought that he fought very well. The problem that you run into when you have a guy that not only has reach, but he has movement, which is what Whitaker was in there against. And then he's got a little bit of speed, and only a little. That was a close battle. Whitaker was not slow. But when Whitaker's starting to get hit, all of a sudden that jab, which is your way to feel where your opponent's out, it's the way you work yourself in, all of a sudden you got to throw the jab out. Everything I touch him with, I need to count. I need to hurt this guy. I need to catch this guy, and I need to do it now because I'm starting to panic. So when you start jumping and lunging in for those shots, the only trade-off on that is you make yourself open. And he made himself open, and he got caught. I didn't have any problem with Whitaker's fight. I thought he looked really good. I think you guys thought he looked really good. I mean, if we want to break this down just into frames, let's take the very last second of the first round away. Whitaker won that round, I think. Do you guys agree with me? I thought the first part of the fight that Whitaker won. I use that as an argument just to represent, as supporting evidence to my initial claim, that Robert Whitaker fought very well. He looked great. He really did. Take a couple of shots like that on the chin, you go down, the ref steps out. I mean, the rest is the sport. That's the rules. But as far as composing yourself, as far as walking out into that environment, making the most of the moment, not letting it get to you, keeping your nerves, keeping everything under control, bringing your skills, implementing your skills, better man wins, we both walk away. Robert Whitaker did all of those things. Absolutely. I was pumped for Robert Whitaker to fight. I love the Adesanya fight like you did, but I want to see Whitaker. I haven't got to see him in a while. He's a guy that I enjoy watching fight. Whenever his next fight is, I will be more excited to see that fight even than I was for this. I want to see how does he return, how does he respond. But as far as his skills and being prepared to fight, man, he did a great job.
You're listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Now, back to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
All right, guys, now let's have a little fun. Let's get to some fan questions.
Hi, Chael. So earlier in the year in Mark Hunt's lawsuit against the UFC, a court decided that there's no evidence doping makes a fighter bigger, stronger, faster, or able to take damage better. And specifically with the Lesnar fight, there were numerous other possible reasons why Hunt lost his bout. And even though Lesnar tested positive, he wasn't doing anything outside the scope of what was considered normal activity for an MMA bout. So my question is this. Do you think that the possibility of fighting an opponent who might be using PEDs is part of the inherent risk that a fighter is assuming when he agrees to a bout? And if you think this is the case now, do you think it should always be the case in the future? Thank you.
So you taught me something there. young lady. I did not know that that ruling had come down on Mark Hunt. So let's back up with what I did know. And this is off of memory, but okay, so Hunt goes in there, and I remember he had a fight with Bigfoot Silva, comes to mind. Of course, the Brock Lesnar one, but there was a third. Somebody else that Mark Hunt fought, might have been Verdum, tested positive. And so Hunt had like this trifecta, and that's what he was saying. He goes, man, everybody I'm fighting, and by the way, that I'm not getting over on, are all taking this dirt, you know, they're all cheating. I'm not cheating. This isn't fair. Well, yeah, he's right, 100%. Which is what the rules agree with that. Every commission has agreed. And that's even why USADA was brought in. USADA is so good at what they do. I mean, these guys are so good. It's a $10 million a year budget, $10.8 million a year that the UFC has to pay to have this company and this team known as USADA ready to go internationally and having the capability to test every athlete, which by the way is 556, 24 hours a day. That includes weekends and holidays. Okay, it's a massive undertaking. And they took it on because they agree with you. They agree with Mark Hunt that that's bad and that needs to not be part of sport. Okay, in Mark's case, everybody that was tested eventually was caught by USADA, but had other times where they slipped through the cracks, hence the resentment. And part of Mark's argument, and this is maybe where he got a little bit out of lanes in terms of what a court could listen to, was to say these guys were dirty, these guys were beating the system, and we all know it. Yeah, you can make that claim, and you could even have people that could agree with you, but not on a jury. You could not have a jury that was that open-minded and influenced. You got to go by the results of the test. You just do. That's just the way it works. There's rules to everything, including the rule before you condemn somebody. There's been a number of people who have had a number of level of success that was almost unexplainable, and therefore had this cloud of suspicion and rumor hanging over them that they didn't deserve. Go, hey, I'll take a test, test me any which way you want. And they did it. And they complied. And they had great results, athletically. And so people keep coming back and say, well, the test was wrong. So you kind of end up in this weird area there. The one resistance that I would have towards Mark Hunt's claims, though Mark was right, though Mark has earned the right to his opinion, and though Mark got burned once, twice, three times, it was who you blame. Who do you blame for that? If Bigfoot fought Mark Hunt and Bigfoot was being sneaky and deceptive, you could blame Bigfoot. If Brock Lesnar, same thing. You could blame Brock Lesnar. Hunt was blaming the wrong people as I saw it. I would not see who you could possibly blame other than the person who did it. I thought anything else was a little bit of a leap. So while some of the things you told me were ruled on in that suit may surprise me. That does surprise me, some of it. Bigger, stronger, faster, and that's not a real thing. That kind of, I would not see it that way. The end result of who do you blame, I don't think falls to anybody other than the athletes.
Hey, Joe, big fan, but I'm also a big fan of Axe Murderer. My question was, where does your hatred for Vanderlei stem from? And if you seen him walking down the street, would you shake his hand or would you guys instantly fade on sight like you guys did on The Ultimate Fighter?
So my hatred for Vanderlei, hatred is such a terrible word, by the way. You know, when I was growing up, I can remember my mom telling me, don't say you hate anybody or anything. It's too strong of a word. So when you say my hatred for Vanderlei Silva, I almost, let me stop you there. That might, this old principle, I'm hearing my mother in one ear, but the wheels fell off the bus for Vanderlei and I right from the beginning. Okay, when I came into the sport and started to make my rise, he was already there. He was a guy that I used to have to sit down with friends at home, push the buy button and watch because I didn't even have a contract with any major organization. And he's main eventing in front of sold out arenas out of Japan. And he was a guy that was in a much higher spot than me. Now, I had a major chip on my shoulder at one point in my life. I knew I could beat all those guys and I knew that spot would be mine if I was ever given the opportunity to prove it. So when I came in, boom, I went right after him. Now, when I went after Vanderlei Silva, nobody else had ever gone after Vanderlei Silva, ever. And he didn't really know how to react to it. He was treated in a certain way and held in a certain regard. And it was of respect. And anybody that would call him out is disrespectful. Anybody who's disrespectful is therefore this terrible person. And that's where I fell. That was his mindset on it. I saw it a little bit differently. Going, hey, Vanderlei, you're in a place I want to be. I am jealous. There's a compliment in there for you. Now, the other side of it is, I'm jealous because I'm quite confident that should be my spot. And we do have a way to figure that out, which comes down to the fight. But I still looked at it in a little bit more rational terms. He was pissed. Vandalay was just flat mad. So finally we had our match and all these different things. I have not seen him since. If I did see him, to answer your question, no, I would not go over and say hi. But at the same time, no, I would not go up and want to fight him on the street. I would rather he just stay in his lane and I just stay in mine.
Jade, big fans of yours here. First question, Kamaru Usman versus Kobe Covington. You've talked a lot about the fact that they're top wrestlers with immense cardio, but who do you think would win in that fight?
All right, well, that's an interesting one, isn't it? I will look at it from this regard. I did not know Kamaru Usman is as good as Kamaru Usman is when he went into his last fight for the world championship with Tyron Woodley. Kamaru was 15-1, just coming off a win over the former champion. He was definitely proven as the top contender. But when you went through it on paper, in every single box, he comes in 2 and Woodley comes in 1. If you were to go look at their wrestling career, he had a great one, not as good as Woodley's. If you were to look at what he had done in fighting, boy, he had done a lot. He didn't do as much as Woodley. When you look at raising up to championship fights and looking with those big moments and dealing with some of those outside pressures, he did a very good job, but he hasn't done it as many times as Woodley. So when you start to break it down in this regard, I have to tell you, I learned that night how good he was. I believed he was very good. I believed he was the second best fighter in the world. I was close to right. Turns out he's the very best fighter in the world. So when I say that I learned something about Kamaru, same with Colby. I knew my whole life Colby was a tough guy. I have come to you guys and told you before Colby got out there to show all of you, hey, keep your eye on this guy. This guy's a winner. This guy's mean. This guy's a hard worker. But as a skilled fighter, and he was already the interim champion, I did not know until that Robbie Lawler fight when he was able to show all of his different skills. The punches, the footwork, the head movement, the transitions from the strike to the takedowns that if you went back 5 fights earlier, weren't the same transitions. He used to come out, he'd throw some hands just to get close, change elevation, and go for the tackle. I mean, we've seen that a million times, but that's also what we saw from him. He did it very well. He advanced and moved on. I didn't know he was as good in as many areas and as refined until his fight with Lawler. So you've got both of these guys, and I think when I say that, guys, I say I didn't know, and I think you guys are thinking the same thing. We're on the same page with that, aren't we? Did we really know that Kamaru was the baddest dude in the world? Did we really know that Colby Covington could go out there and kickbox some of the most feared kickboxers to have ever done the sport, some of the most, right, the Robbie Lawlers of the world? Did we know that? In truth, did we know that? So then you start to come down, okay, how are these guys going to do? Who are the common opponents? What can we look at that's a common denominator here? And it gets a little bit harder and harder to do. And I know so many people talk about the cardio of these two, and I love that because it's a very real part of the sport that often gets missed. It is hard to imagine that one just tires out and quits. We just haven't seen that from these guys. And it does start to become more of a skill battle. And I think it's a fun match. It's the appropriate match. It's about time that it happens.
Hi, Chael. My name is Mason Kelly. I'm a huge fan. I was wondering, do you think Justin Gaethje will have to adjust his style in order to win a championship belt? Right now, he's having a lot of success, but he doesn't seem to be mixing wrestling in at all. He's just standing and throwing punches over and over again, which is awesome. But anyway, interested in your reply. Thank you.
Do I think he needs to adjust to win a championship belt? Well, let's tackle it from a little bit different perspective because he has had championship belts. So now you're talking about winning a new one in a new organization, 155-pound class. A lot of moving parts there. 155 pounds is so damn hard. Golly. 145, 155. Oh, my goodness. Those are hard weight classes. But I want to tackle it from this perspective, which is not totally what you asked, but on the same vein. He's not going to change his style. We need to accept that. He has already accepted that amongst himself. Don't forget, this is a Division I All-American wrestler. And I say don't forget because he's never shown you anything in that cage to make you believe that. He doesn't even talk about it in interviews. He just goes in there and punches and kicks and takes punches and kicks and keeps throwing and walking through them. And he's durable and he's fun. And way more times than not, it's victorious, but he's not even looking to change that style up. So we can have that conversation between you and I. We could even send this to Gaethje and let him in on it. He might even weigh back on it, but I'll tell you what he'll say. Go, oh, yeah, I agree. I know. He's not going to do it, though. This guy's very stubborn. Oh, and by the way, he's extremely successful, right? It's very hard to convince any human that what they're doing is wrong or what they're doing could be done even better if, and then get them to make those changes when what they are doing has brought them such a tremendous level of success. So on Justin Gaethje, how far can that go and how far can he grow? I agree with you, and it's not a matter of he needs to go into the gym, unlike most fighters. Most fighters that aren't doing something out there that might help them don't know how to do it. Gaethje has the skill. It's already in him. It's just a decision of, do I want to go with this strategy or this strategy? He's made his choice.
Hey, Chael, how do you rank Pitbull in the featherweights of the world? Like him, Max, Volkanovski, Aldo, Ortega. How do you rank Pitbull in there?
Well, to use one word for Pitbull, it would be underrated. To use two words for Pitbull, it would be underappreciated. I mean, this guy is a face of an organization. He and his brother, in truth, there's two of them. So they help each other out. So it's almost like they get double the time. They've almost stacked the deck, but they've still done it successfully, and it's still happened. And it's still a very real thing. I would tell you, Pitbull has beaten some guys so easily that he's one of the. Some of them you chalk up to he couldn't do that again because what you're witnessing and what your eyes are telling are almost so surprising. So yeah, I bet he couldn't duplicate that, and then he does. He does duplicate it. He does come back out and do it. So then you have one of those knockout artists, right, or some of those submission guys that, sure, I see what he does, but he couldn't do it in later rounds. Now, we always do that as human beings. Whenever a guy doesn't do something, we then proclaim that he can't do something. Paulo Acosta is going through this in some ways. He's never been in championship rounds. He's never had to go into championship rounds. He stopped every single opponent he's ever had except for Yoel Romero, who was his last opponent. So there's a built-in belief that he therefore cannot do 20 or 25 minutes, though there's absolutely no evidence of that to be true. All we see is a guy that goes out there, operates, uses his energy within the time constraints that he's agreed upon. We have no idea if he has the strategy and the ability to extend, but we decide that the answer is he cannot. Well, Pitbull's been around so long, all of those arguments have come up. Somewhere along the way, he's beat him up. Well, you know, his kryptonite's going to be a great grappler. Taking on great grapplers, beat him. Well, you know, his kryptonite's going to be a great striker. Taking on great strikers and beat him. Well, he could do it at this weight class, but he couldn't change to this weight class. He wouldn't make it anywhere. Wouldn't win a world championship. Well, he fights really good in the first two rounds, but in that last round, I'm sure he would give up. Nah, fought all five rounds. Had no problem. His opponents were more tired than he was. He passes the test everywhere. He passes it absolutely everywhere. So when you want to work him into the mix with the Volkanovskis or the Max Holloways of the world, and you want to have some kind of a dream fight for the featherweight division, man, you found your guy.
Hey, Chael, love the show, but I've got to ask the question that's on every UFC fan's mind. What is the UFC going to do with Jon Jones? I mean, the only four fights that anyone really wants to see from Jon Jones at this point is Brock Lesnar, Stipe Miocic, DC, of course, and Israel Adesanya. It's pretty obvious that Brock's not coming back. Stipe and Daniel have got a date together, according to reports. And Israel Adesanya, number one, is light compared to Jon Jones. And on top of that, Israel Adesanya needs to fight Paulo Costa. I'm not a huge fan of fighters winning a title and moving up in weight to get another title without having a title defense on the title they already have in their own weight class. Conor McGregor did it, but hey, he's Conor McGregor. So does Jon Jones needs to wait on the winner of Reyes and Weidman? Let me know.
Yeah, so what I believe is in the short term for Jon, and this has never been stated by anybody, just as a fan that's sitting back and observing things from 10,000 square feet and looking down and going, okay, what pieces do we have to put this puzzle together? I believe we got a bit of a four-way dance going on, and whoever emerges will become the number one contender. We've got Walker versus Corey Anderson. Both could make a case right now. We have Reyes versus Weidman. Both could make a case right now. With the wins, particularly with the wins, period, but particularly if that were Walker and or Reyes, I think that's who likely would emerge. If only one of them wins, either one, but if only one of them wins, I can assure you that's who's going to be fighting for it. If both of them lose, maybe Weidman and Anderson have this battle. They figure that out. Somebody's got to fight Jon. But I would offer you this, just to make sure you don't ever forget. This landscape changes fast. This sport changes fast. It wouldn't matter if you wanted to go back 1 week ago when the biggest name out there was Conor McGregor, and now it's not. It's Israel Adesanya, and Conor did nothing wrong in between. He had a rare skill set that he was absolutely confident nobody could come in and duplicate, and if they did, he could go to it, and all of a sudden you got Adesanya. It's just the way that it goes. I could go back 6 weeks and tell you the biggest fight that the entire industry could possibly put together would be Daniel Cormier and Jon Jones, part three. It's not true anymore. It's not. People don't want to see that fight as much. They're never going to see that fight, and nobody's talking about that fight, and never will again. Point B, things change fast. We don't know what's going to happen with Jon Jones. There is an outside possibility that Robert Whittaker out of nowhere announces he's now a 205-pounder. And a lot of people are going to look around and go, oh, really? Based on the defense in the takedowns that Whittaker showed against Joel Romero, and based on the fact of what a wonderful kickboxer he is, instantly on paper, that match gets real intriguing. I hear what you're saying about the Stipe, but Stipe doesn't need Jon Jones. Stipe has a fight coming up with Daniel Cormier. Nobody appears to need Jon Jones right now, and Jon Jones has put himself in a position where he doesn't quite understand that concept. He does not understand how important it is when he came out of the ring last time against Santos to have something lined up, have something ready to go, have something to drop on the table. For so long, it had been done for him. That time is gone, at least for the short term. A year from now, there could be four or five big picks, and you're just dying to hear who Dana's going to announce that one is. Right now, not a lot going on at 205, and you have a champion who's sitting there who isn't helping to steer that. Our friends at Geico want to help you save some cash without even leaving the house. You can't beat that. All you got to do is go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It just might be the most rewarding thing you do today. All right, guys. Thank you. That was fun, by the way. I got to tell you, I do like the fan questions. All of you that send those in. I think it gives us a good chance to go back and forth a little bit, and we will do a little more back and forth on Friday. Enjoy your week, everybody. I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Pro wrestling fans, listen up. WWE Hall of Famer and one of the greatest to ever step between the ropes, Jerry the King Lawler, is coming to Podcast One with the Jerry Lawler Show. Join the King and his co-host, Sean Reedy, as they get together to reflect on Jerry's legendary career from Memphis to the WWE to just about everywhere else. The King will share his thoughts on the current wrestling product and might even have a few guests stop by. Download new episodes of the Jerry Lawler Show every Friday on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. And if you love the show, tell your friends and leave a rating and review.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.